This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with former Congressman Charlie Melancon. He ran for the U.S. Senate against David Vitter 3 years ago and lost a bruising battle to the Republican on Capitol Hill, who has been at odds with President Obama, as has most of the Louisiana delegation. With the default coming in a week, if Congress does not come to an accord with the president, particularly the U.S. House, what will happen? We'll talk about it with Charlie Melancon. Also, some representatives with the group Stand for Children on Common Core. This is the curriculum that Governor Jindal has railed against, and this group, which has been in accord with the governor on many other education initiatives, may have a different opinion about this. We'll talk with Rhonda Allman, Dr. Reverend Lowe, and much and many more. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside Baton Rouge, please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We're 1 week away from the default of the U.S. government, and as the government shutdown grinds toward a potential debt default, some of the country's influential business executives have come to a conclusion that their voices are carrying little weight with the House majority, that their millions of dollars in campaign contributions helped build. That's the top story in today's New York Times. With us to talk about what's going on in Washington with the government shutdown now more than a week old is Congressman Charles Melancon, former U.S. House member, Democrat from Napoleonville. He was a conservative Democrat. And he ran for the U.S. Senate, as we know, against David Vitter and did not win. But he is still active in politics and is now back in Baton Rouge as a lobbyist, business consultant. Good morning to you, Congressman Melancon.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm fine. What's going on in Washington?
It seems like nothing is going on, but everything is going on. The more things change, the more they stay the same, except I think they've gotten worse. I've been involved with the Fix the Debt group in this past year, and because I was a Blue Dog, because that was what the Blue Dog's number one focus was to pay attention to the debt and start trying to bring it down with the PAYGO rules that were put in at one time and, of course, taken out at another time. Things like that could have helped us keep the budget in balance or at least start bringing the budget costs down, but that didn't happen. But the campaign to fix the debt has always assumed that addressing the country's fiscal issues should be the long-term effort, and they've organized themselves around building political momentum for getting this done. It's been tough, especially with what's going on right now, because everyone is just totally frustrated with both sides or more engaged in partisan posturing, particularly on political issues unrelated to the funding necessary for the function of the government. And it's, I think all of America is starting to show its frustration.
Well, the majority in the House is, of course, a Republican one, but of the 232 GOP members, only 17 are in districts that were won by President Obama in 2012. So that makes it difficult to go with the president, and it would seem that there are some Republicans who are ready to do that if there were a clear vote on whether or not the government should continue, but the House Speaker has not allowed that to happen. It would seem that this, in ordinary circumstances, Congressman, might be a resolvable issue, but is this in danger of going all the way to default?
Well, I pray not. And speaking to the issue of how we got to such a radical situation in Washington speaks everything to something I've talked about for a number of years, and that's reforming the reapportionment process by setting up commissions every state where the districts are done based upon pure numbers, as compact and concise a district as possible, as much homogeneity as you can give it. But that being said, then you might get more competitive districts which a lot of these guys don't want once they get into office, but more competitive districts whereby you pay attention more to the majority rather than to the minority that's out there. And I've always referred to the vocal minority and the silent majority, and that's kind of what you've got. But as we're going forward, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm starting to hear things being said that give me some hope. Paul Ryan, yesterday, I guess it was, made some comments on an op-ed that he did. And in that op-ed, he talked about the being open to leaving the door open for bipartisan efforts, and talked about ideas that the president had supported at earlier when they first had these conversations. And that gives me some hope that they're maybe getting some movement within their caucus to be realistic. They're seeing the polls. The Congress is down to 10%, and I don't know if the Republicans in the Congress have gotten below 10%, but possibly so. And that, you know, this thing about who's winning and who's not winning ought to not be in the conversations at all anywhere. It ought to be about doing what everybody was elected to do, and that is go to Washington to govern, to do what is good for the people. You don't have to like all the laws that pass. As a matter of fact, if you're not participating in the process when laws are passed because you just say no, then when that law is passed and you're not agreeable to it at all because you don't think it's a good bill, well, you had the opportunity as an elected official representing your people to be a part and parcel of perfecting legislation. And the way that used to be done was both sides sat at a table, talked about what the legislation was going to do or be, and put in those things that they thought made it work for them from both the left side and the right side. And when it all came out in the gumbo, nobody was truly happy, but nobody was mad. Nobody was getting up or walking away mad, and one party getting up and walking away happy. That's when you don't have a good deal for sure. But what they were doing was working through legislation that was good for the country and for the people. When you get this partisan bickering, when you get this standoff process, all you're doing, the only people that are getting hurt are the people out in America outside of Washington.
297-5633 for Congressman Charlie Melançon. He's been out of Washington as a lawmaker for the last 3 years, but has stayed there off and on in his new endeavors, and he knows the lay of the land pretty well. He also knows about state legislatures, having served in the Louisiana legislature. And before we go to the callers, the Republican Party has done a magnificent job of getting the districts that are favorable to them, because in the 2012 election, nationwide, Congressman, more people voted for Democrats than Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives, but the Republicans have a pretty solid majority.
You know, in time, and both parties can get take some blame for the reapportionment process this particular time, because there's, 30 governors that are Republican with legislatures that are Republican majority. So, yes, they've gerrymandered it to their benefit. And what you find is that the people that are in Congress that I knew were more concerned, Republicans were more concerned about a right flank opponent, and the ones in my party were worried about a more left flank opponent, because they were drawing the districts to be deeper red or deeper blue rather than trying to have districts that was more representative of the people. I mean, if you look at the 5th congressional district, it goes from the Arkansas state line above Monroe, comes all the way down to Pointe Coupee Parish, jumps over to West Feliciana Parishes, and runs the top part of the boot going east in through east and west and east Feliciana over to St. Helena Parish. Now, that is not a reasonable that's gerrymandering.
Well, and Cedric Richmond, the congressman from New Orleans,
right,
also represents Scotlandville.
He comes all the way up along the river on one side of the river and then comes into the north end of town so that they will have – it was drawn to give as many Republican seats because we have a Republican majority. If it had been a Democratic majority, it had probably been tried to there had been an attempt to try and draw it so that there had been more possibilities for a Democratic seat. That's an area that unlike what we're talking about today, should be reformed, but it's going to take a constitutional amendment and take the 50 states to ratify it, and that could take years.
Marcus in Lafayette. Hi, Marcus. You're on with Charlie Malasaw.
Good morning. Congressman Malasaw, I would like to start off by saying I am so disappointed that you were not successful in your bid to unseat David Vitter. I believe that you would have been a much better representative for the people of Louisiana. I believe you would have represented all of the people, even those who had leanings politically that were different from your own. And I'm just sorry it didn't happen. I do applaud you for running a what I consider to be a positive campaign while you were slammed every step of the way with negative campaigning, lies. But that seems to be what the Republicans like and want, and so they got what they deserve. I hold both parties accountable for what we're facing now. I believe gerrymandering is one of the biggest threats to this country. I believe it is a bigger threat than Al-Qaeda.
Could be. It's, you know, I thank you for the comments. I appreciate it. We thought that the people of Louisiana, if they got the opportunity to know Charlie Malanson and how Charlie Malanson works in politics, and it's about compromise and finding common ground and about working for people. You take an oath of office, and that oath of office is all about governing. It's all about doing what's good for the people. It is not about kicking the can down the road. It is not about threatening or extorting other branches of the government. It is about doing what's right for the people, not grandstanding, not taking up these ideologically popular taunts or rants that people seem to get elected on. And I wish that, and I see things circulating every day and wonder how or why do people even forward that stuff.
297-5633 for Charlie Malasaw, who on this show previously has indicated that he is dismayed at the tenor of negotiations on all matters of life in Congress, and he is one who speaks from experience. Jacoby in Lafayette. Jacoby, you're on with Congressman Malasaw.
Hello, Congressman Malasaw. I'd like to agree with you that we need to reform the reapportionment process, but Congress could simply fix it in large part by increasing the number of representatives in the House, and that's something that they have the legislative authority to do. And I would like to point out that this debt ceiling crisis shouldn't really be even a crisis. The 14th Amendment says that the U.S. must pay all of its debts, and this idea that we have to get permission from Congress to pay the debts that they've already obliged seems to be like tying our hands. I don't think we should even be able to do this. And finally, I agree with you that the Republicans are partly to blame on this, and I don't really put much blame on the Democrat side. I really think that even Republicans that are not Tea Party activists or Tea Party are responsible because they're going along with this. And
all right. Your response, Congressman? Thank you, Jacoby.
Yeah, and you're right. The unfortunate thing is that the Congress did act on a budget, and in that budget there was they took the president's budget and came to an agreement to reduce by a couple of $100 billion what the president was proposing, and that got passed by the Democrats and the Republicans in the House, but it's gone nowhere. You know, so all they have to do is pass that clean resolution and send it to the president. And, you know, if they get that thing, the budget was done. It's a matter of getting it to the president and getting it signed. They keep talking about a clean bill. They've got one if they would just use it. You know, these government shutdowns don't do anyone any good. And if we don't meet, or by the time that we need to, which right now is tentatively the 17th of October, if we don't act on lifting the debt ceiling, I am reading nothing that is amusing or fun from the financial industries, the business industry, the people in business, or any place else that says that's what we ought to do.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757 or Inkstershow at wrkf.org. Back in 90 seconds with Charlie Malasaw. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing. The guest is Congressman Charles Malasaw, who left Capitol Hill 3 years ago as a member of Congress, but is following the shenanigans, the chicanery, whatever you want to call it, that has resulted in a government shutdown. Kurt in Central. Kurt, you're on the air with Charlie Malasaw.
Good morning, Congressman. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. Like your previous caller, I was very disappointed that you were unable to see David Vitter. Given the most recent polling showing that the National Republican Party is down to an approval rating of 23%, which is the lowest ever, and given what's going on right now with the party, they were trying to rebrand themselves being kinder, gentler, and a larger, bigger tent, and seems to be now going in the opposite direction. Is the GOP in danger of pushing itself into total irrelevance?
Well, let me start by saying that my purpose for being in on the call this morning is about the campaign to fix the debt and to not speculate on the partisan or bipartisan politics that are out there. But I guess generally, any if you read any journal, any paper, any author, they are basically saying that this party is trying to has got a self predestination for themselves, and that's in the gutter if they keep up this kind of thing. But you know, it doesn't matter in terms of what their politics are. This should be about governing. This shouldn't be about trying to take an issue that a minority of the Republicans don't want, which is Obamacare. They were against it from day one, and intertwine it with governing. The governing part means that you need to send a budget to the president. You need to fund the government. You've already committed to the funding. You select your credit card. You've gone to the store already, and you've bought the stuff you want. Now you got to pay the debt, and the Treasury is going to run out of money. Their first problem will be on the 17th, but by the end of October, it will basically be like a domino effect of being unable to meet any of the obligations. And it's one of the things that I said when we were in the Congress if Taiwan got invaded by China, the U.S. would have to borrow the money from China to go and defend Taiwan. And that's how sad this is, but the Chinese are sitting out there wondering about this debt that they hold, a big part of this debt that they hold, and whether this government's going to pay it, as well as all the other countries in the world.
Pastor Randy and Zachary, hi, you're on the air with Charlie Malasaw.
Good morning, Congressman. My question to you this morning is, isn't the constant bickering between both parties and the president, doesn't that not only weaken the president, but also weaken America internationally with its influence in trying to help people around the world? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Reverend, it absolutely does. Anytime the rest of the world looks at us and sees the shenanigans that are going on here, the inability of our government from the White House and the Congress to come together to resolve an issue that is about the good faith and credit of the country, about the goodwill of the country, about the financial stability of the country, that doesn't send a good message. And, of course, the president just canceling his trip to the Far East sends a message, even though he's called the leaders in that region to tell them, explain why he wasn't being able to come for the second time. It still doesn't send a message to those people that are our allies over in that region that we're the strong ally that they look to in hard times.
297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 if you're calling outside the local area. Charlie Malasaw, former congressman, former state lawmaker, and now a lobbyist and business consultant, still active in politics, and he is part of this group Campaign to Fix the Debt. Now, we've also talked in recent days with Jim McCreary and Bob Livingston. They're part of this same group. They're both Republicans and conservative Republicans at that. If if you can come to the table with these people when they're out of office, why can't it be done right now with people who may have differences of opinion and belong to different political parties?
Well, I go back to the reapportionment process and the representatives that are being elected and sent to the Congress now. They're taking these oaths of offices before they take an oath of office when they after they get elected. They're taking an oath to the Karl Roves of the world, and not just them, but others. And when you do these oaths that you're never going to do anything to cross a line from some organization that is not a part of the process, then before you even take your oath of office, you violated it. Because your oath of office is about governing. Your oath, regardless of what party, your oath of office is about getting in there and trying to work for the betterment of the country. Yes, you have your own district politics and things you have to worry about, and you look to those. But when the reality comes and you get a situation like this, this is about the good of the country. You know, I got a lot of criticism for supporting the bills that bailed this country out and did the stimulus. But let me tell you, this economy would not be, even though it's still not strong and steady like we'd like it, it would never have been like this again, and we would have faced every economist I talked to, conservative or liberal, at that time said we would have been faced with a depression, not a recession, but a depression and a worldwide depression that would have made the depression of the earlier part of last century look like child's play comparatively, because there was so much money and so much wealth and so many things different in this whole world. And Louisiana, I mean, and the U.S. was such a major part of everything that went on in the world. Look, when I was in the Congress and meet with the parliamentarians from England and France and Italy and Belgium and places like that, you know, first thing they had to do was tell us what we were doing in America affected what was going on in their countries, whether it was on the political side, whether it was on the financial side. No matter what we did, when we did something, we affected the entire world.
Well, I referenced the New York Times top story today. Business groups see loss of sway over House GOP. Leaders mull financing primary challengers for the Tea Party. It reads, Congressman, that their frustration has grown so intense in recent days that several trade association officials warned in interviews that they are considering helping wage primary campaigns against Republican lawmakers who work to engineer the political standoff in Washington. Quoting David French, the top lobbyist at the National Retail Federation, "We are looking at ways to counter the rise of an ideological brand of conservatism that, for a lack of a better word, is more anti-establishment than it has been in the past." It seems at this point that nothing is budging this group of 30 or 40 Tea Party types, including a few members from the Louisiana delegation, who are pressuring John Boehner into holding firm no matter what the costs.
Well, what I've observed over the last several days or weeks is that John Boehner has stood up and stood by the Tea Party group, which when they came in, if you recall his election to Speaker, was not a roaring majority of the Republicans in there. As a matter of fact, it was a relatively tight race for a Speaker. Now I'm reading and hearing that they're embracing him because he stood up to the President and he stood up to the Democrats in the House and the Senate, and so now they're warmed by him. I think, in all honesty, what has to happen is somewhere between now and the 17th, John Boehner needs to then sit these people down who now have more trust in him and say, guys, it's time for us to fish or cut bait. It's time for us to do what's right for this country, and it's time for us to get a clean continuing resolution out and to get that signed and to lift the debt ceiling. I've got a commitment that we will have a sit-down discussions and we'll start having honest discussion. And that's what the campaign to fix the debt has been all about, is let's look at fixing the debt. It is a long-term proposition that adversely affects the future of this country, the stability of our economy, and the jobs and livelihoods of the people out there. And it's not complicated if you're not going in there and demanding that you do one thing or another, but instead go in there and find places where you can find common ground, Get the low-hanging fruit first. Let's start working in that regard. Strengthening Social Security, begin tax reform, reform the Medicare payments to the physicians, make them more responsible for outcomes rather than just patient quantities coming in. There's reform in the military retiree health care. Those young people that are working for companies are using TRICARE rather than their own hospitalization that they're provided from their employer. That's billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars a year. And then, of course, what's happened adversely, the people that are on health insurance are using generic drugs because the insurance companies want to keep their costs down and the rates down. And then the people that are on the Medicare Part D, they're using the name brand stuff more so than not. And that's why that's a substantial savings to the government. So there are places that they can start that at least show an effort to get this thing going in the right direction.
All right. I'm going to read a few emails. We'll go back to the phone lines. Gary writes, what is the constitutional definition of the congressional duties obligations to constituents versus duties obligations to the nation?
I'm sorry, to the what?
He's talking about the balance of obligations and duties for congresspeople to their constituents versus the duties to the nation. What comes first?
Your first obligation politically?
Yes.
To your constituents. Your first obligation as a public office holder is to the country and the stability of the country. This is not about a local project that you want, that you got to fight for, and that other people may be voting against you. This is about the entire country's existence and stability and economic health and welfare.
Okay, Mike Wolf, he writes, the president, the federal government, and the mass media have been misinforming or deceiving the American public for months. The recurring revenue of the U.S., some $2.5 trillion annually, is easily adequate to handle all necessary debt service of the federal government. If federal revenue is inadequate to continue to fund government programs, employment, or other ongoing expenses, that is not a debt default. If revenue cannot support current operating expenses, then like any other enterprise, the federal government must cut its expenses and overhead, if necessary, by laying off employees, deferring projects, and downsizing. Regardless of raising the debt ceiling, any default on U.S. debt payments would be solely the responsibility of the president. That from Mike Wolf.
Very untrue. And I talked earlier about these things that are passed around that sound like this is true. The responsibility falls on the Congress, first of all, to pass a budget. And so they have gotten a budget, but they haven't done anything with the budget. They reconciled that budget with the president. The president agreed to it, but the president has to get it on his desk in order to sign it for the budget to be implemented. If the budget is not implemented and they default on the debt ceiling and don't increase it, do those two things, then this president by himself cannot govern. There are three branches of government, and two of those branches have responsibility for legislating and administrating. And if you look at all the times the president, because he couldn't get things done, did that which was allowed to him under executive privilege, he got criticized profusely. Every president normally does, but profusely for doing those things just to get people into an office position, a secretary's position, so that the agencies could run and have a leader to make sure that the will be done. And, you know, it's this thing about the president is all-powerful and can, with a stroke of a pen, do whatever he wants. That's monarchy. That's a dictatorship, and we don't live in that.
Paul Anopoulos. Paul, you're on the air with Congressman Malasson.
How you doing, Congressman Malasson? Thank you very much. Is what's going on now just a way of forcing President Obama to forcing the House and the representatives to rewrite the budget right now? And we went through one cliff. Do you think they actually have the not the audacity, but the plan to push it to the next cliff and see what happens? Because this cliff was supposed to be bad. Did they actually in a playing cards figure, let's see what the next one and how bad it's going to be?
That has kind of been who's going to blink first, what has been going on. I'm hopeful from what I'm hearing and seeing Leader Reid is expected to move legislation in the next week that would push the debt limit until December 31st, 2014, which would increase federal borrowing authority to around $1.1 trillion. Procedural votes could begin this next week, but it's not clear whether such a bill could gain the 60 votes required to overcome a filibuster. So the Senate Democrats would need at least six Republicans to vote with them for a clean debt ceiling increase in order to overcome the procedural hurdles and to get the legislation passed. The first vote to look for this legislation should come to the floor in form of invoking cloture on a motion to proceed. So if you watch those things, you'll see if there's any indication that the Senate is going to go ahead and act or if the votes are there. Then there's speculation earlier this week that the Senate leadership was going to bring the House passed legislation providing for back pay for furloughed federal employees to the floor this week. However, there's concerns about the GOP attached amendments to the measure, which, of course, put all this stuff in that doesn't have to do with governing, has to do with their politics. And so the House is likely to continue passing piecemeal spending bills, and we'll go nowhere. Do we go up to the 17th? Does it fall apart at the 17th? There's actually enough money to pay off the interest on the debts that are out there, it is believed, until about the end of October. But after that, your obligations, your commitments, the interest on the debts, and everything else becomes insurmountable or for the ability of the Treasury to meet those demands and pay those bills. Right. And that's when it collapses.
Here's a observation from John in New Roads. Agriculture markets have ground to a halt during the shutdown without data from the USDA. Crop markets do not function properly. Specifically, the pecan market has not opened yet because the data supplied by the USDA is not available to set a price. This has repercussions that are wide-ranging.
Oh, the shutdowns, I assume that's a Bergeron that's over in Pointe Coupee Parish, but that's true. There is so much that people haven't felt. Individuals like these folks in the pecan business, those people in the agriculture business, having the information they need to market to continue their businesses. What's happened is with the shutdown is at the first blush is over 800,000 employees were let loose. They're on furlough. They're not getting any checks in. I talked with a friend of mine yesterday morning whose son-in-law is in the Navy Submarine Corps. He is somewhere below the ocean for the next 3 months. They don't know where, but the wife has gotten a letter from the government, from the Defense Department, stating that you will only be getting your basic pay. You'll get no other subsistence such as housing or any other benefits that were there for you. And we don't know when to tell you how long this will go for.
We'll be back to wrap it up with Congressman Melanson and also talk with some folks for Stand for Children about what's going on in education, particularly the Common Core dilemma, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing. A few more minutes with Congressman Melanson, then we'll let him get on his way, and he'll be at the Baton Rouge Press Club Monday in downtown Baton Rouge at a new location, the Belle of Baton Rouge Hotel. A question from Derek in Mid-City. Why can't Democrats and Republicans compromise to raise taxes and cut entitlements to lower the deficit? It seems taxes are only lowered and benefits only raised, perhaps because that is a more politically amenable solution. Your thoughts, Congressman?
Well, the first thought is these people that have pledged to Karl Rove or whatever other group to never do whatever it is that they stand for are violating their oath of office in terms of they were elected to govern. They were not elected to shut the government down. I don't care which party they're from. They're not elected to try and extort another branch of the government to get their will and their way. This is a democracy. There is a process. It's an ugly process. They've always said, look, you don't want to watch don't watch people making laws. It's worse than watching people make sausage and hot dogs. But at the same time, it's prettier than this normally. This is a sad commentary for where it's come to. And I'll go back to the reapportionment, gerrymandering, if you would, and how trying to fix that problem. If you look at the entire Congress and you look at the number of people that have competitive races every year, it is minimal. It's probably no more than 30 to 40 seats at the most that are out there that can be in competition at any given time, because the districts have been drawn so that you've got very left wing, very right wing, and little in the middle. And the little in the middle used to be a big middle with the Tuesday Morning Club Republicans, the moderates, the Blue Dog Democrats, the moderates, that could come together, form a coalition, and sometimes have enough votes to get things done, or at least to bring people to the table to negotiate legislation, to try and perfect it, to make it legislation that will work rather than legislation the way I want it, and I don't care about the way the other guy wants it. And that's what the process is supposed to be about. And part of our failings is the reapportionment process, and part of the problems I see right now is with this funding ability of people to fund unlimited into political campaigns. Those 30 or 40 people that we're talking about received huge amounts of money pumped in to their campaigns on their behalf to get them elected from very hardcore, extreme party people in the United States.
Well, thank you, Congressman. Always good to talk with you. See you in
That's
a few
a
days.
Pleasure.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Now we're joined by some folks representing Stand for Children Louisiana, an organization dedicated to education reform. And we'll start with Reverend Cleely. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to see you. Well, how did you get involved?
Well, I got involved with Stand for Children because I truly believe in raising the standards for education, and our children need to receive the best quality education that's out there. And when I say out there, I mean that our state leaders can provide with setting good standards and policies in this global market economy that we have today. Our children, whether getting ready for college or career, must be able to compete in this high-tech global economy that we live in today.
Well, according to the numbers that you have provided, 77% of fourth graders and 79% of eighth graders in Louisiana are unable to read at grade level, and Stand for Children is obviously trying to make things better. And with us also is Rhonda Allman. She is an educator and is an organizer at Stand Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning.
And how did you become a part of this?
Well, I'd been an educator in East Baton Rouge Parish school system and in the recovery school district for about 7 years. And over the past 7 years, I've recognized the need for an increase in higher academic standards, and I'm sure many educators have recognized that need as well. So my role is to organize educators around driving innovative policies that affect positive student academic achievement.
And we also have a familiar face, voice to Louisiana, who has been involved in activities in education and in other venues, business. Bridget, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Nice to be here. Thank you for having us.
And what is your title with Stand for Children?
I'm actually with the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry.
Well,
I work on education
obviously
issues.
Obviously, I know that.
I'm here with my good friends from Stand for Children, and we are here because we are united in trying to have higher standards and expectations for the children of our state.
Well, Brigitte Nealon, and you have been involved with LABI for a long time.
Long time.
How many years?
I've been there twice, actually, so probably about 20 years total.
20 years. And why is Stand for Children an appealing group as far as what they're endeavoring to do in education in our state?
Stand is a unique organization because they are formed primarily to give parents a voice in the education of their children, and that's everything from the school building level to policy and legislation.
Well, Stand is an organization that has gained attention from people like Bill Gates, obviously. What about the source of funding? That has been something that the group has been been praised for and scrutinized for. You want to talk about that, Rhonda, as far as where Stan gets its money and whether or not this is relevant to the discussion involving education?
Well, Stan, we're basically a grassroots fundraising organization. We do receive a lot of funds from organizations who promote higher academic standards for students and really just people who believe in positive outcomes in education. So it's not we're not driven by any big business for any political agenda or anything like that. Everything we do is for the promotion and for the academic success of students. Mm-hmm.
What about Common Core?
Well, Common Core is a big initiative for us because we believe that every child deserves access to college or career once they finish their high school education. So we have endeavored to push for these standards. My education and experience in Common Core has been extensive over the past few years. I've done numerous workshops, have had very, very extensive training in Common Core. So, we see Common Core as a dire need in this state, especially considering the fact that our students are so far below the national level where it concerns student achievement. And so Common Core is the step in the right direction that we need in order to drive student success and to make sure our students are competitive on a global market, not just on a state level. We want to make sure that mm-hmm. students are competitive in a global market and that they have the skills that they need in order to succeed in life.
Where do you teach?
I was a former educator for the last 4 years at Park Forest Middle School, and this year I worked at Lehigh. And so 3 weeks ago I took on this role at Stand for Children, and I'm excited for that opportunity to organize educators who are committed to providing excellent education and raising the bar for our students. So that's my background.
Rhonda Allman, who is now the educator organizer at mm-hmm. Stand Louisiana. Now, the governor has raised concerns about Common Core. Does that make your challenge a bit more daunting?
No, I don't feel like the governor has any concerns over the standards themselves, because I believe that he knows and he believes that higher standards are necessary. In Louisiana, there are only four schools in the entire state who actually have international benchmarks, who actually provide international standards for their kids. So those are the schools that we see who with national merit scholars and kids who compete for high academic awards on the secondary level. This is something that is necessary for every student.
Okay. Well, the stories that are as recent as this week, a headline in The Advocate, Jindal has concerns about Common Core. Bridget, as far as the governor having some reservation, does this take it off the table, or is the situation such that you're going to continue advocating this?
We're going to continue advocating. Unfortunately, there has been politicization of Common Core, which really are only mathematics and English language arts standards. It's not curriculum. There are no textbook requirements. There's no data collection. Unfortunately, people who oppose higher standards are going around, and there's really quite a bit of misinformation. People are being frightened by what they're hearing. Most of that, it has very little basis in fact. And those of us who believe that our children are as smart as kids in other states are just going to continue forward, and hopefully the politics, the issues that are come out of politics can be addressed, and we can get about building a quality workforce that can give an improved quality of life for our citizens.
Wilson Tell of The Advocate, in a story on the 6th, 4 days ago, says Governor Jindal, in his most expansive comments on the issue, says he wants State Education Superintendent John White and the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education to answer questions raised by a state lawmaker who wants to drop the Common Core standards. 297-5633 is your number, and 877-217-5757 outside the area. Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning to your guests. Like the governor, I'm a graduate of the East Baton Rouge Parish School System, and like the governor, I'm also a graduate of an Ivy League school. What I'd like the panelists to respond to is the governor's kids go to private school. They don't have to take the leap, and they're being educated for success. But the public school kids are having to take the leap, and they're being educated to be professional test takers. That's a obviously unequal standard. How do they feel about that and this injustice that's still allowed to occur in Louisiana?
Rhonda?
Well, I'd like to address the fact that Bobby Jindal's kids do go to a private school, but they are required to take the leap, and I know that because my child attends that
Actually,
same
Actually, they go to the
school.
Lab school.
Right, they go to the lab school.
That's a public
but
school,
one
kind
thing,
of.
It is a public school. What we
kind
pray,
of.
Yeah, and so what happens is at U High School, there's no shift in the academic instruction there because they've been teaching according to international standards all along, so I'm sure he supports Common Core because his kids are getting international standards at UI. Well, so I'm not at all confused about that.
Well, he may end up swaying the superintendent of education to shut it down. John White was a supporter until a few days ago, and now we don't know. Reverend Lee?
Jim, let me jump into this free here. I truly believe that the governor's is backtracking on what he initially decided to do to come out in support of Common Core standards. This is about the standards to raise the bar for educating all of our children, particularly here in the state of Louisiana. And for him to digress, to backtrack on supporting it is pure politics. And once the governor can remove politics from educating our children in Louisiana, we will begin to see the shift of improvement of our kids across this state educationally now. And until that happened, we will forever be bogged down in the mire that we are right now. And I would say this to our state superintendent of education, John White, is to have some backbone. If you're going to support Common Core standards, then you dig your heels in and be supported and fight for the children of this state. This is what the state superintendent of education must do. If he believes in educating the children of the state of Louisiana, then he will stand firm on Common Core standards.
Karen in Ascension Parish. Karen, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm opposed to Common Core, I guess because I cannot get my questions answered. What I'm concerned, is it the federal government that is going to regulate this?
No, it is not. The federal government will not be regulated. The regulation of Common Core standards is in the hands of the state, and then it goes down to each individual school district. Now, what we're going to be doing is each individual school district will train the teachers, develop their own curriculums to meet the state Common Core standards. Now, there's a lot of misinformation out there that is circulating, trying to take away from what the real and the true meaning of what Common Core standards are all about.
297-5633 in our remaining moments. Thank you, Karen. And Governor Jindal, you said Reverend Lee is doing this for political reasons. What political benefit is there to him being against Common Core?
I think when you really look at it, when you pull the cover back on what the governor has been trying to do across the spectrum in the political arena, his aspirations goes beyond the state of Louisiana now, all right? And having said that, I don't back down from that. Because when you look at national politics, what's happened, as your prior guest was talking about, there is a core group on the opposite side of the spectrum who are trying to sabotage whatever we are trying to do to advance the country and to advance the state of Louisiana.
Well, Bridget Neeland, my guess is that you're not quite as strong in your beliefs as the Reverend Lee on this particular subject, as far as the governor doing this for political reasons. And is the jury still out as to what he will do?
Well, I think that the missing part of this conversation is the State Board of Education. That's the group, elected and appointed, that voted in 2010 for Louisiana to adopt the Common Core. Louisiana led this initiative. It was a conservative-led initiative back in 2007-2009. The current BSE members are standing firm for Common Core. I agree a lot of the questions do need to be addressed, and I think that over the next few months, BSE's going to work very hard to address those questions, but you don't throw out the standards that can benefit our entire state just because there's fear and misinformation.
Well, thank you. Bridget Nealon, LABI, Rhonda Allman, organizer at Stand Louisiana, and the Reverend Clee Lowe, fired up about Common Core. And we'll revisit this topic, I'm sure. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.